Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode, I think, I want to say 20. Yes, 20 of season 2. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Chris Castellani, and Eddie back 2 weeks in a row. Eddie, you can't end the pod last week saying you're a Scream fan and not have me invite you back. You just, that'd have been
so
cool.
And this is already, it's a closer moment here because I get to see your beautiful face, Jeffrey.
Than last time.
I know, yeah. That's right. My face wasn't up there, yeah.
Do you guys do a video version of the pod, too?
Reviews, usually.
Your reviews and interviews, which, fuck, I got to send the interview, actually.
Are we doing one this week?
For what?
Video for the Scream review or something.
Yes.
I look like shit. So
I'm wearing a fucking poncho. I'm greasy as shit. Don't worry about it.
You're wearing a poncho. Yes. Yeah, so if you're watching, very comfy. Watch. Actually, this part you can't see. So Chris,
right? Yeah, this part, right?
You have until the Scream review to do whatever you need to do. Mm-hmm. Slick the hair back. We also have an interview with Judy Greer. Got a little news to get into. We'll talk about some new shows. There's some shows that debuted in the last couple weeks, and maybe Boba Fett we can talk about briefly, but also Scream. The fifth Scream movie, Scream 5, a.k.a. Scream. I mean, just, I get why. I get why. It's not the first.
They address it.
Yeah, it's a joke within the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very meta, but the Scream movies are all mad. I mean, it is. Mm-hmm. It's very true to. I'm curious what everyone else thinks. I'm very curious. I actually wanted to see it twice. I didn't get a chance. So we'll see. I'm not saying this is like a Joss Whedon Justice League where it's like two different Jeff D. Lowe's saw that movie. Because the first time I saw the Joss Whedon Justice League, I loved it. And then after every subsequent viewing, I was like, God, this is ass.
Well, don't forget, Trill Bones left Jurassic World thinking it was better than Jurassic Park. And then he saw it again and he's like, wow, am I the dumbest human alive?
Right.
Wow,
that's very true.
Trill Bones.
Mm-hmm. So
it happens.
We'll talk all the Scream movies. We'll talk about them. But I don't know. Don't say anything. My prediction is I think it's going to be a more even if one person dislikes it, I think it'll be a positive rating combined. We'll see though.
I think we know who that one person might be.
We'll see. But I think averaged out, it might be positive.
Yeah.
It's also that time of year too, where I'm just going to favor things a little more and they may fall off throughout the year. We'll see. It's just one of those. It's tough. Some things last 12 months. It's very rare, but it does happen now and then. It does happen now and then. What's coming up next week? I just want to. It's
Cherry.
Next week was supposed to be Morbius, right?
Yeah, that's right. And they moved it to March.
Yeah, next week was supposed to be Morbius. Nobody can figure out if that's a rumor. Man, there's nothing next week. Well, you know, we'll probably do the 355. Maybe we'll pick something else up. Well, Macbeth is
daughter.
On. Macbeth is on Apple TV Plus. Man, King's Daughter. Oh, I'm talking about the Lost Daughter. Oh, the King's Daughter.
Different one. King's Daughter is Pierce Brosnan as some sort of Disney thing. Or
King's
not Disney.
Daughter. They started. You know. So the King's Daughter is a King Louis. The what?
The 16th. Or 14th, 14th, 14th. He'd be 14th. Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan. Kaya Scodelario, who's in the Maze Runner stuff and a bunch of other things. They shot that movie in 2014.
Jesus. Yeah, wait.
2014 oh. They shot that movie. It's coming out next weekend.
I thought it said John Hurt was in it, like it was William Hurt, but John Hurt's in, like, he passed away like 4 years ago. It's like, holy shit.
Unbelievable.
Could have been in it.
Yeah, yeah, seriously.
And the guy who did it, Sean McNamara, he has a movie, a Ronald Reagan movie with Dennis Quaid as Ronald Reagan that, yeah, that filmed in 2020 that comes out this year. He's in
a hasn't movie. He directed, don't ask me how I know this, didn't he direct like Bratz and like a bunch of really, yeah, shitty like Bratz, kid movies?
Some of like the, he did a Three Ninjas movie, Casper.
That's right. He did the one with Hulk Hogan at High Noon and Mega Mountain.
Yeah, he's done some fucking, he has a wild.
When are those getting a fucking reboot? The Three Ninjas. We need those.
Yeah, guys. For real.
Yeah.
I would have bet $1 trillion that Three Ninjas would have been in your like favorite movies ever, Eddie. I was just it was the easiest bet of all time.
Oh, what I'll hang out with Tum Tum all day. I love that movie, dude. That's, I like he, I could go on and on, but I'll stop there. I love that crew.
What a 20-year run for Sean McNamara, going from the Casper sequels to the Suite Life movie for Disney, a Bring It On sequel, Cats and Dogs 3, Paws Unite, and now a Ronald Reagan biopic.
That's how it works sometimes. What would be the most like jarring amount of time to see someone's like last performance, like after they died? Like usually you'll see, like when if an actor or an actress passes away, it's like a year.
I have an answer that I remember vividly was Bernie Mac died, I think June or July of 2008. And he was in Old Dogs, which was November of 2009. I remember when he showed up being like, why is the dead guy talking to us? Like that was really when I love Bernie Mac, but that was the one I would say once you go beyond a year without publicity, like there was obviously like Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus with Heath Ledger, but everybody knew that that movie got delayed and had to be reshot. He just shows up in that movie and it was really weird. So that one stands out. That was about a year and a half.
I know there's a John Malkovich movie that like he filmed that's not going to come out for like 100 years or something like that. And like his tagline for the movie was like, if you heard it, the movie you'll never see or something like that. Like you'll be dead by the time this comes out or something like that. Yeah, I think Robert Rodriguez made it too. It's just like one of the most John Malkovich things of all time.
Yeah. and then we can probably talk Macbeth. I like Macbeth quite a bit for what it was. I gave it a 91. We can talk about that. That's on Apple TV Plus now. I think we'll be posting probably our 20. I'm caught up in Okenjek. You're close. I'm basically done with 2021 stuff. There's a couple international movies. I just can't wait any longer.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be waiting until fucking April to do my rankings. And I really hate doing them past January. I saw Drive My Car, that Japanese movie.
Oh, it's so good.
Fucking so fantastic. Good. Top five for me. Fucking excellent. I nabbed a screener that a friend had because I couldn't find it anywhere. Oh, fantastic. So if you can find it, there are ways to watch it. They're like, you want to watch it? Of course. But yeah, The Good Boss and Parallel Mothers. Those are the two that I've been trying to find. They're Spain movies from Spain. But other than that, that's the rest of the episode is going to be that interview, news and Scream. But first, our first ad read is Cuts Clothing, folks. We all know work attire's changed. I mean, look at us. This company, you know, we're a t-shirts and shorts company.
And ponchos, don't forget.
Ponchos, could be anything. but whenever someone walks in with a sleek looking t-shirt, it's from Cuts Clothing. You can just tell by like the bottom, the way the shirt hangs off. Uncomfortable office attire, those days are over. I always love the guy who invented the Cuts, his name is Borelli too.
Borelli. It's so random that he's unrelated to.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not like it's like Stephen Smith. It's like not that Borelli. I've heard of Borelli, but like it's just because, you know, our own Borelli is such a prominent name in the company. They make clothes that are for any occasion, work, dress it up, dress it down, doesn't matter. Very comfortable, lays on the body nice. Signature buttery soft, custom engineered tri blend tee. That's the thing I'm talking about right there. The bold take on a classic design. We've said it before, GQ says the only shirt worth wearing, but it's a very comfortable shirt, tucks in well, stays tucked into, you can untuck it, doesn't matter what it is, really great shirt from Cuts Clothing, all their stuff is fantastic, very minimalist, like I said, sleek design, work leisure, apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/lights. That's cutsclothing.com/lights for 15% off. The only shirt worth wearing. Before we get into news, shows, three shows that are out right now. Book of Boba Fett. I actually didn't get this. So on Wednesday night, you can catch our Twitter spaces. We're breaking them now. We have four episodes left. I wasn't on the last one. I despised the last episode. Really didn't like it. And I was so sold after the second episode saying, I'm gonna stay up every night till 3 to watch these. I don't know. I'm sure I'll get a text from Bob Fox on Wednesday or on Tuesday night, and he'll say, you're gonna stay up. And I'll say, yeah, I'm staying up. But I really, really didn't like, and I actually didn't even there. So spoiler alert, there are like cyberpunk American graffiti, like old London, like punk kids in the show. And I didn't mind them, but it had one of the most off-putting slow speed chases I've ever seen. And it felt so clunky and like low, but it was so bizarre and just completely took me out of the episode. Really didn't like it, which I could not believe, because I figured, you know what? First episode, maybe not my favorite, but it sets things up. Second episode, one of the best Star Wars things I've seen in a while. And then the third one, I thought it stunk. It was quite shocking. And my one other comment I'll make on it, and then Chris, I'm curious what you think. And Ken, Jack, you can say what you thought for those who didn't listen. I listened to an interview that Tamora Morrison had, Ming-Na Wen had the interview as well, with the D23 podcast. Actually, one of my old coworkers from GMA, Tony Morrison, he's one of the co-hosts. They have interviews all the time, and they were talking about setting that up. And Tamora Morrison mentioned like doing the haka on the first day of shooting, and did it to like intimidate like the stunt people that he was going to fight. And then he said, like, I was a softie the rest of the way, but like I set this tone. He said they watched like Marlon Brando clips throughout filming, all these like intimidating things. And that's what I want to see from the rest of the way. We're three episodes in, but present day Boba doesn't give off that energy at all. I'm like, I guess he's maybe he's like, I get giving time for him to set into that world, but there's not a lot left. And the transition, and I'm sure we'll see it. So again, I'm giving it time. Like, he's a badass in the flashbacks. And then in present day, he's not. And maybe it'll make sense at some point, but right now it's just, I don't know. It just doesn't flow for me. Like he's saying all those badass things. Like, I just want to see him be a fucking badass the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's all there. I just want to see it. I don't know. Chris, where do you stand?
I'm not crazy about it. And to be completely honest with you, I don't know if I'm going to finish the season because I don't. Okay. Here's the other thing too. I really liked season two of The Mandalorian, and I like what they did with Boba Fett in season two of The Mandalorian. But
he
also think
a lot of ass in season two.
He did. I also think Boba Fett is the Jeremy Lin of the Star Wars universe. He was a guy who was really cool for 5 minutes, like for a brief period of time. I don't know why. I don't really need eight hours of Boba Fett. Like, he was cool in Empire. Like, he was fine. He was great. He's like, he was a meme in the 80s before memes were a thing. And now we need to see him. Like, we need to find his life story. And that is the big problem, is I would forgive that. But yeah, it doesn't, like, the images we've had in our head of what Boba Fett actually is, it's not coming to fruition right now. So I'm just kind of watching it being like, okay, this is, it's not bad. It's not badly made. It's not poorly directed necessarily, though I agree with you. Some of the chase scenes are kind of, especially in comparison to the action we got in the latter part of The Mandalorian in both seasons, which were like kind of mind blowing. I might revisit it at some point, and I don't, it's why I haven't even spoken publicly about it. Cause I know there's people who really like it, and I love Star Wars fans so much that I don't want to, you know, I really hate the pin and try to, like, you know, pour salt on everything.
Oh, I am too. Nobody hates Star Wars more than Star Wars fans. I hate even talking bad on it, but it's like, enjoy all like the fun Star Wars shit. Don't get me wrong. Like, I love the references and all that, but if we're talking like really critically speaking, like, I can't, like, man, I will go to bat for The Mandalorian, but this one,
Where I'm at. That's where I'm at right now. And I might just be a little bit burned out. I mean, we've gotten so much Star Wars stuff since Force Awakens. I mean, TV series, movies. Well, we've had five movies. We've had two TV shows. We're going to have more. And I love Star Wars to death. There's, you know, every Star Wars movie, I'll be the first in line to see it. But right now I'm just like, it's okay. It's whatever. I'll revisit it at some point, but I'm not crazy about it.
Ken, Jack, where do you stand?
Yeah. I think that the kind of the thing we went into Boba Fett with, and something I was definitely concerned about, was like overexposing the character of Boba Fett. Right. And like the little bit we got of him in Mandalorian was really cool. And I was like, it's great in a dose, but I'm curious, like, just how are you going to overexpose it? And maybe just, you could possibly not ruin the character, but like not do him justice. And I think that the way that they've portrayed Boba so far is like a little bit of a betrayal of character, because like one of the coolest things about Boba Fett is like, he doesn't say shit. Like, he's just in the background, he's stoic, he's badass, he doesn't say anything. And they're making him into this little bit of a goofball. And like, he has these like the thesaurus lines, like an expanded vocab. Like, have him say like three words a season, an episode, and I'd be totally fine. And I think that would be more, you know, apt for the character. And definitely that last episode was a good example of why Rodriguez is a little bit better in doses than in full form, because that was very Robert Rodriguez-y in execution. But I will say
No, guys, they're worth noting. He directed 1 and 3, and then Steph Green directed the second one, which is the one everyone says they like the most. So
exactly, yeah. I think the chase scene was a little overboard. Some cool Easter eggs in this episode for sure. Really random stuff, like stuff peppered throughout it. Like they smashed through Ralph McQuarrie art, which I thought was kind of cool. Which is awesome. And it could definitely be done a little bit better. Just have my only thing, and like obviously it's too late for now, but like, just don't have him speak. The less Boba says, the better. The more stoic and cowboyish he is, the better. Don't make him into this fucking goofball. Although I will say, I can't wait to see him ride at Rancor. That's gonna be fucking sick.
Oh yeah, that's a classic Boba thing. Yeah, the Ralph McQuarrie OG Jabba painting showing up was a very, see, that's the thing, like, whatever, like, critically didn't love it, but I mean, I'm a sucker.
Yeah, and Sparky the droid too showed up, the force sensitive droid that actually saved the universe.
Skippy.
Crazy
Skippy the Jedi droid. Kendrick, you though, I've only watched the first episode. The intro is fucking amazing. I love the show. I just watched a bunch of movies this past couple of days. I'm going to finish it tonight. Peacemaker on HBO. Oh, John Cena, so good. Peacemaker. Oh, it's awesome.
It's so, so good, man. It's amazing. It's like, it is one of those like series that like even one episode in, you could tell like this is going to be very, very good and probably one of the better superhero shows. And all three episodes I thought were amazing. He has like this, like Gunn just has like this brilliant grasp on humor where he finds like these oddly specific sort of like jokes and like just moments that he like can like really diagnose in like a joke format. And I always find that very funny. Like the Louis C.K. joke, which is in the second episode, I think is so fucking funny. The whole feel of it feels like a mix to me of Hot Rod and a bunch of other elements, because like it's very like the vigilante John Cena relationship is very much to me like Kevin and Rod in Hot Rod, and like the whole glam rock, like the shooting the shit in the wooded glen, very, very Hot Roddy to me. And I loved it. Cena has such an unfucking believably great sense of comedic timing, and it's just not something you'd expect. Like the dude is just, he's unbelievable. Like he's, and like we always talk about like the wrestlers turn to actors and whatever. Like as much as I love The Rock, probably not among the top actors of wrestlers turn actors. Like Batista is definitely up there. Like he's incredible. And I think John Cena is like right there. Like, and then Brock below him. But man, he crushes the series.
And then Righteous Gemstones as well. Righteous Gemstones is a very, very, Eddie, is that a suggestion we got to throw to you, or have you seen Gemstones?
No, I'll have to check that out too.
Gemstones.
Danny McBride, you would love it.
Gemstones is a huge, huge suggestion. That show is ridiculous. It is. So there is something, I won't spoil if you haven't seen it, but there is one character has like a squad of people with them that when they first show up in the first episode, I had to pause it on HBO Max because I was laughing so fucking hard. It's so dumb. It's a very, very, very funny show. Very funny show. Yeah.
BJ and Judy are two of the funniest like characters as far as back and forth goes. And even like, I would say BJ and Keith, those two, as far as ancillary or tertiary characters go, like they crush that series. They're so goddamn funny.
And I do like that it seems the season's going to have another like mystery element to it. Mm. It wasn't like a major mystery in the last one. Like you figured it out pretty like the reveals were quick, but like how it played out ended up working out. It's like, there's going to have a little bit of that mystery though, for a little while, it seems. It's Righteous Gemstones is some funny ass shit. Actually David Gordon Green, executive producer. He did the Halloween movies.
Yeah.
Did an amazing movie called George Washington. People should check out. He's done a lot of those comedies, like with Danny McBride. That's obviously why Danny McBride co-wrote the Halloween movie. So it's a major, speaking of Danny McBride, great scene in Hot Rod.
Mm-hmm. Very, very funny scene. Yeah,
beat people with traffic cones.
Rod parties and
my
me.
Hat. It's my hat now. great.
I drink green tea every goddamn day.
definitely. Yeah. Gemstones. If you watched last season, Gemstones, you did. I must watch Label slept on it. I was in tears multiple times. Episode and then news, trailers, bunch of other stuff. Brought to you by Every Plate. That's right. Every Plate. Experience full plates, fuller wallets, with America's best value meal kit, folks. Whether you want to save time, money, maybe you want to learn to cook, just eat healthy. Every Plate makes sticking to your New Year's resolution easy. Again, also wallet. People, the amount of money people, I'm like, it's great. It's great to, you know, use all those delivery services. They're fantastic, especially in a pinch, but you know, costs a lot of money doing that. And Every Plate has affordable meals delivered to your door, ready to go. Six simple steps, 50% cheaper than a meal made from a grocery store. You obviously taken out, especially in big cities, that gets expensive. One meal from Every Plate is about the same price as one cup of coffee. How about that? That's a pretty easy way to put it. They shop for you, they deliver for you, and they give you the stuff that you need. And the recipes are fantastic, easy to cook, affordable, and delicious. Awesome stuff. All these deals on, you know, the delivery apps, they're great and all, but man, they just rack up. And these, and right now, January, $1.79 a meal. That's crazy. Like, this is the thing to do right now, especially in the winter too. Winter, you feel so much less motivated to run to the store. You know, you want to order something, but Every Plate, guess what? You can order, the ease of that, and it's cheaper and it's healthier and you're making it. So it's satisfying. Try Every Plate for just $1.79 per meal by going to everyplate.com, entering code lights179. Get started with Every Plate for just $1.79 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code lights179. Lights179, everyplate.com. It's $104 value. How about that? The lower price point's great. Again, you know, love delivering, love getting the crappy food, but no, you got to mix this good stuff in. Because, you know, it's almost what? It's almost fucking beach season, right? It's like 10 degrees in New York. Fucking freezing this week.
So cold.
News. First, new looks at Paul Dano's Riddler, Colin Farrell's Penguin released. Chris, I mean, this isn't like the Paul Dano thing isn't shocking. We kind of saw that, nor is the Penguin, but I thought they looked cool. I was surprised people were surprised by the first looks. Like, we've seen him in the trailers, but the Zodiac Killer is what the vibe that's given off with the Riddler.
I love it. I think I said this before. I've reached this point with this movie where I'm afraid of how excited I am for it, because like everything I've seen is so fucking cool to me. Every trailer, every clip, the character design, the costumes. It looks like we're going to have a Batman that doesn't use guns this time, which is a major advantage. He's not going to kill people. These are all basic things that I really look forward to seeing in a Batman movie. I don't think I said it on here, but like, I just think, man, if we're talking perfect casting, like, I don't know if you guys have played the Arkham games, but like the one thing that those games get right is the fact that the Riddler as a character is just a fucking pest. And like Paul Dano, a wonderful actor, is like the human embodiment of a pest. That guy is moist. I don't know how that happens. He's amphibious as a person. And I think he's so perfectly cast as the Riddler. And I think the design of the character making him creepy. It's the next logical step to me. If you're like when people saw The Dark Knight, and I remember when they announced or first showed Heath Ledger, and people were like, man, that's a very different look. And what people realized is like, you know what, in 2008, chemicals burning a guy's face and like giving him this immaculate face paint, that wouldn't fly. I feel the same way about the Riddler now. A guy in a top hat with question marks all over it. It just, it wouldn't slap in 2022. And this look, I think it's perfect. And obviously, like, I mean, you could almost book a best makeup nomination for the look Colin Farrell as the Penguin. I mean, good Lord. I mean, that's incredibly unrecognizable. So yeah, I'm all over this. I think this is going to be awesome.
I'm so woke on Penguin. I feel like it's going to end up not being Colin Firth or something's up there. Something is for sure up there. I just don't know what it is, but I agree with you.
I see it in him though. I see it. It does look like him to me. I don't know why, but it does.
Something's up there. That's all I'm saying. I do agree with you on Dano. Like, it's so crazy how good he is at that sort of role. Even in, I rewatched Prisoners the other day, dude, he is so good in that. And like, that is should be proof positive right there that he could play a guy like the Riddler. And I'm excited to see how that sort of shakes out. Very pumped up for this movie. I do agree with you though, that I'm definitely getting to the point where I'm feel like I'm setting myself up to let myself down almost, but how much I'm excited for it.
Yeah. And I do think, like, we talked about this after the last trailer, they're on the verge of showing too much. Like, they've showed a lot of character stuff. Now, that's also just the lay of the land. The fact the movie got delayed like a full year, like, you have to keep pumping out content. So, yeah, no, I'm with you though. Yeah.
I didn't dislike it, but did anybody get a little bit of professional wrestling vibes from the Riddler? That was my only problem.
You think he's like a Sting or something like that?
Yeah, it felt like the Abyss from TNA. Do you remember that guy?
No. Wait, hold on. I gotta go look.
Yeah, go look it up. It had that kind of vibe, like an executioner type gimmick, you know? And I'm not as, you know, I don't know the comics and everything like you guys. And that, you know, the Pest thing, I like what I hear, and I have still a very high hopes, but something about it looked like a little too much gimmicky pro wrestler, but
that's fair.
That's just me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as far as the Penguin, I thought he looked amazing. I agree. They gave me big time Johnny Depp Black mask vibes with how good he looked as Whitey Bulger, you know. So I like that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. I think the movie's gonna be fucking awesome. I don't know why it wouldn't be. We talked about it briefly at the end of our interview because Judy Greer was in the Planet of the Apes movies that Matt Reeves did.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So very, very, very cool. Excited for the Batman. How about this one? I'll start with you, Eddie. First trailer for the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reboot titled Bel-Air, which, I mean, it's definitely a wild vibe. I have nothing really bad to say about it. It could stink, I guess. But you know what? It's different than I thought it would be. I don't know. It seems more dramatic. It's just not what I thought it would be. But it's quite intriguing. And let's keep in mind, I think the most important thing here is Will Smith developed it. His involvement is, I think, a very important thing to remember when looking at this. You know, my least favorite thing people say about these types of projects, like, is it necessary? No, literally nothing. Nothing past the original is ever necessary. Empire Strikes Back, not necessary. Godfather Part II, nothing is fucking necessary. But they did it, so who fucking cares? Like, they made it, so just accept it. You don't have to watch it. This is one of those things. Is it necessary? Not at all. But you know what? Guy made his, you know, career off, like, became one of the biggest stars ever, still one of the biggest stars ever. I'm gonna, you know, I'm going to trust it to that extent. Original is an incredible series, but I kind of like this. It has a different feel to it. You know what? That's a cool way to bring it to a different to a different generation. Also, based off, I want to note, based on a fan film called Bel-Air as well.
So there was guys directing it too. The same YouTube,
exactly.
Dude.
Yeah, Eddie, what do you think?
You're right. It was far more serious than I anticipated. Once you sent that to me, I was like, "Whoa, I did not expect that." However, I think it has a chance, just based off that trailer, to be kind of a powerful show, possibly.
Right.
It seems like I don't know. It just seems like there might be something there. I don't want to discount it, but at the same time, I don't know if, like, how are you going to get those Fresh Prince fans back? Like, it's almost like it should have been something different, but I don't know. I think it has a possibility to be good. I was not the biggest Fresh Prince guy. I just never really got into it, but it was surprising overall. But I think it has a possibility to be something pretty, you know, powerful, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that part of how I digested this is like the original Fresh Prince, like the show, the sitcom, is based on the producer Benny Medina's life, right? And like that core story definitely has the elements of being a great dramatic show or movie or whatever, because like that's a classic story, right? Like the person being forced to integrate somewhere where they like quote unquote don't belong, like that's an ironclad storyline, that's totally works. But the problem is that the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air exists, and that is, I think, is the primary problem for Bel-Air, because disassociating from that sitcom is very hard, especially because the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air had great dramatic moments as it was. It's just that those great dramatic moments are sprinkled into the comedy, whereas this looks like it's going to be vice versa. And like, it's one of those things where like, it's hard for me to be like why, like, or be anti the show, because like the big three original guys, like Will Smith, like you were saying, Jeff, is on it. Benny Medina, who produced the original sitcom, also back on this. Quincy Jones, who very famously produced the original, back on this as well. And like the fact that they're letting the guy who made the YouTube short that this is based off of write and direct this, I think that's really awesome as well. It's just like, I don't know. It's just like, I feel like it's gonna be very hard to disassociate, especially because just Fresh Prince of Bel-Air already did drama very, very well.
Yeah, I don't see myself watching this, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I watched the trailer. Now, the trailer itself, if you're going to reboot Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, that's the way to do it. Because, okay, strap in, folks. Having recently watched a few episodes of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the comedy on that show kind of sucks. I know Carlton did his funny little dance and everyone thought it was great. But what works about that show are the dramatic elements. Like the most famous scene from that show is the Will Smith talking about like his dad leaving. Like that was the moment when everyone's like, whoa, Will Smith is like he's a really powerful, like legitimate dramatic actor. So if you're going to reboot it, that's the way to go. Now, you're right, Jeff. And all you guys brought it up that Will Smith has a key part in producing this. He also was a big piece of producing After Earth as well, I believe. True. So he's not exactly batting 1,000. When it comes to his passion project, it may very well be good. I don't see it lasting very long. It seems like one of those things like the recent Twilight Zone, where it's something that people will be really interested in for like a season or two, regardless of the quality, then it'll just kind of drop off. But it doesn't look bad. I know people have a huge attachment to the original, again, cynicism, but like, I think that it could work. It could work and it looks fine. It's just not something I'm super interested in.
Yeah, I just think it's a very important distinction to make. And Ken Jack even expanded on what I was saying with the amount of people involved. There's a cool combination that you don't always see with these types of reboots or rehashes or revisitings of IP, is that you have returning people, but you have a fresh idea. And you have the people who are returning open to the fresh idea. And that's very cool. Whether it's good or not, I don't know. But these are the types of things where, look, there's no stopping the rehashing of IP. So let's stop fucking complaining about it and maybe just find a way to infuse some new shit into it. And you know what? I kind of hope this does work. This would be a great, just like The Force Awakens. Now, granted, The Force Awakens inspired a lot of soft reboots that suck ass. But some of them have been fine. Like, you know, there's been, and actually, I will say Red Letter Media brought this up. We should also, actually, might have been someone else. It might have been Cosmonaut. Someone brought up, like, we don't credit/blame Jurassic World enough for the first soft reboot.
No, that was them. That was Red Letter Media. Yeah, they talked about it when
it came before Force Awakens. But point being, you know what? If this inspires similar things, great. You know, like, great. I hope that's the same way Invisible Man kind of reshaped how they thought about some of these Universal Monster things. So that it's, you know, I'm only going to view that as positive. The Raid, Ken Jack, getting reimagined by Michael Bay, Gareth Evans, and Patrick Hughes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird because, like, so Patrick Hughes, I interviewed him probably over the summer at some point. And he actually, after the interview off camera, told me, he's like, oh, by the way, because we were just talking about The Raid. And he's just like, oh, by the way, like, I got The Raid. Like, I'm doing The Raid. And I was, don't tell anyone. And I was just like, well, fuck, now I got to sit on this forever. It's kind of sucked. But it was like, it's an interesting kind of grouping. I don't want Michael Bay involved with this is my number one takeaway.
Right.
Michael Bay is the antithesis of the mind I want attached to any sort of reimagining of The Raid. And number two, like, I don't think there should be a reimagining of The Raid. It was a perfect perfect action movie that did not need to be touched upon. It had an incredible cast of actual martial artists, all masters of Silat, like Joe Taslim, who now played played Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat. It had Iko Uwais, who's been in like Snake Eyes and all this other stuff. A lot of like really, really good physical actors. And now like they're going to end up casting, like Michael Bay is going to end up casting like some fucking aging action star in this, and it's gonna
Josh
be like
Duhamel. They're gonna bring Josh Duhamel back for the Raid reboot.
Gonna be a hunk of shit. And like the one thing I will say that makes me a little bit more at ease is because I do think Patrick Hughes is a little bit of like a wild card as far as directors go. Like he is really, really good at directing aging action stars, which lends well here. Like in Expendables, he did Expendables 3, which I think is the best Expendables, by the way, like the best action scenes at the very least. And I don't know. I don't think there should be a remake at all. That's my bottom line take on this, because The Raid is seriously one of the best, if not the best action movie, like pound for pound, that's ever been made. And this sequel is just as good. Incredible.
Where do you guys stand with The Raid? The Raid, by the way, I don't know. I still think one of the best trailers of the last like year or so was the Michael Bay ambulance movie that's coming out soon. As a California Dreamin' dramatic reunion. Yeah. I don't know. It's like I don't hate that. Where do you guys stand, though?
His movies always have good trailers, though. Roland Emmerich is the same way. His movies always look
There's a Roland Emmerich movie coming out in 2 weeks. Moonfall.
I look
the
forward
moon's
to talking
crashing
about
on
it.
Earth.
Yeah. You know what? This is one. There's a lot of classic movies where I'm like, I haven't seen it, and I go, whatever. Like, it doesn't mean that much to me. I am ashamed of the fact I haven't seen either one of the Raid movies, so I don't have much of a comment on this. I'll just say that I'm with you guys. We're like, I'm really, and this will never stop, so this is gonna fall on deaf ears. I'm really tired of, let's take a really famous foreign movie and just like do it like shot for shot in America. Like, you know, and that's never gonna change. They're doing it with another round now, which came out a year ago and won Oscars. But yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate that we haven't gotten over that hump yet. But, you know, again, I don't know. We're so in the early stages of development. I can't really judge it. I got to wait for a trailer.
That actually, and Eddie, I'll give you your thoughts. That actually, I'll contradict myself a little bit when I said like existing IP. The foreign movie to American movie, and it sometimes works. That one I have more of an issue with than just like rehashing old IP. Because sometimes you're like, like the straight up remake, it's like, man. Next up on the list, Steven Soderbergh movie, new one coming out, Kimmy, starring Zoe Kravitz, who's going to be in the Batman, hits HBO Max on February 10th. And agoraphobic Seattle tech worker uncovers evidence of a crime. And you can tell she's a tech worker because she's got blue hair.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Eddie, what do you think about this trailer?
I'm very conflicted, Jeff. I'm very conflicted because I am deeply in love with Black Mirror. Deeply in love. And like,
when I didn't know that. I didn't know you liked it that much.
I like it a lot. And when you get into this game, it's like I'm always going to compare you to that. That's not to say it's not going to be good, because Soderbergh, like you said, he's a fucking heavy hitter as well. But I don't know. It's like a cage match to me. I don't know which way it's going to go, but I'm intrigued nevertheless.
Ken Jack.
Yeah, it's just very Soderbergh. It's not a movie that like jumps off the screen to me, or at least a trailer that jumps off the screen to me like, fucking can't wait for this one. It's more like it's almost like with what was the one he did in the iPhone? Was it Unsane?
Unsane.
Unsane. Yeah. That one was one where like I was like, I don't know if this is gonna be any good. End up watching
that, Claire
enjoying
Foy?
It. Claire Foy and someone
Jay Farrow,
the dick boyfriend. No, so who played the stalker? Someone played like this her stalker. Or person that worked in the psychiatric hospital that was of note.
It was a good movie, though. I liked Unsane.
Yeah, that was one where I had no expectations and end up enjoying it. So, like, that's I think where I'm going to come going into this one.
Yeah, I don't think it looks very good, but I think it could be very good. I think that's the kind of, I'm not going to say that's a Soderbergh special, but I think that
that's very Soderbergh-y. Yeah, like
he's had this weird thing lately where he'll have movies that on paper feel like they shouldn't be very good, and yet he shot a movie on a fucking iPhone and it got well received. Like he's very capable of doing that. Just a quick sidebar, like didn't Steven Soderbergh said he retired like 11 years ago and he's made like he's made like 9 movies. Like that's a lot of actors do that and directors do that and musicians do that. Like you're not athletes where your body breaks down. Like you could be gelatinous just you know sitting in a chair and directing a movie, you know. So but whatever, that's beside the point. He's super talented. He's made bad movies, but he's a director who's like, I don't know. He's never really had like a lot of huge peaks and valleys. Like I feel like he's been relatively consistent basically his entire career.
I think 70s, 80s is basically where you'd find most of what he's done that's just from me.
True. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he won best director for what, Traffic? That was early 2000s. So, I mean, like he's hit some, you know, Aaron Brockovich, I think was early 2000s. So like he's hit home runs kind of in every decade. He's a very talented guy. And I mean, I think this year is going to be like Zoe Kravitz's year too. Like she's been around for a minute, but I feel like after this year, she's going to be like a mega star. And so I am rooting for this. I the trailer didn't impress me, but it could be good. And I trust the people attached to it.
Yeah. I mean, Traffic, fucking fantastic. Ocean's 12 is my favorite movie of all time. Out of Sight, Aaron Brockovich, Solaris. What else? And even recently, I mean, like, so I like No Sudden Move a lot. I really like No Sudden Move for what it was. Let Them All Talk, I like kind of like just kind of snappy, quick. Some people fucking hate, thought it was a gassy fart. Laundromat, I thought was a gassy fart. I know we were Ken Jack and I really didn't like stunk. That. But Unsane for what it was awesome. And Logan Lucky, I mean, I fucking love Logan Lucky. Side Effects, Magic Mike was surprising. Yeah, so like he, you know what though? He keeps trying different things.
Yeah.
And that's something that you just always, that's why you'll always get me to buy in and watch his movies and without any reluctance.
He did that Liberace movie too, the HBO one with Michael Douglas, Behind the Candelabra. Wasn't that him? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. But either way, he's made a lot of really, really good movies. And I think this will, you know, be another one.
That comes out February 10th. Yeah, he did. That movie was like 10 years ago or so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matt Damon.
Pre-retirement. Right.
I forgot Matt Damon was in it. Moving on. Actually, let's do a quick ad read here for Manscaped. Manscaped 2022 is here. It's winter. You got to groom in the winter. You can't let the winter get away from you. New year, new you. So get the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped. Get the signature lawnmower 4.0 electric trimmer designed to trim hair on, you know, tough or loose skin. Got the skin safe technology. You're not going to nick yourself and fucking bleed all over your bathroom. What a horror show that would be. A lot of blood and scream, by the way. Ghostface couldn't try to kill anyone with the Performance Package. It's skin safe technology. I'm sure they're going to love I said that. The advanced skin safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on you know, the ball sack, other areas too. Comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight too, so you never miss a spot. Make sure your routine is also beefed up with the crop preserver, crop reviver, the ball spritzer. It's nice and fresh, especially in the winter. You get sweaty, you get hot. The complete Manscaped set as well. You get the shed travel bag, the anti-chafing boxer briefs, all these free gifts and more. It's fantastic. They have a body wash now. That's awesome. Really great stuff. Get the discomfort, gross hygiene, get that all out of here. That's a very attainable New Year's resolution. Not being dirty, like being well groomed and clean. Like that, I feel like that's an easy one. If you're looking for a New Year's resolution, just be clean. Get 20% off and free shipping with code LIGHTS, LIGHTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off of free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code LIGHTS. It's the new year. So clean up, shave up. Be safe around those areas in 2022 at Manscaped. A couple more pieces of news. Oscars reaching out to people to host them. By the way, the Golden Globes happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't fucking care. If Hollywood doesn't care, that's going to be my rule on this. If Hollywood doesn't care, I don't fucking care.
And actors don't take the Golden Globes seriously regardless, even if it was happening like in a more public way.
Yeah. Didn't air anywhere because of a boycott. It's the second time we haven't really, it's crazy. I mean, I guess I'll read Power of the Dog and West Side Story won, Will Smith won, Nicole Kidman, Rachel Zegler, Andrew Garfield, Cody Smith McPhee won, the kid from Power of the Dog. Ariana DeBose won for West Side Story. Jane Campion won Best Director. Kenneth Branagh won Best Screenplay. Hans Zimmer won for Dune for score. Original song was No Time to Die. Drive My Car won Best Non-English Movie. Best Animated Feature was Encanto. Yeah, I mean, isn't that the change too? Wasn't that a big? Yeah, it was foreign, non-English and foreign language. Didn't they change how they did that? That might have been it. I don't know. They're claiming they're doing better shit. Okay. But so maybe there won't be a boycott next year. But that's what won. Succession won, Hacks, all that. Yeah. That's the Globes. Oscars in March, though, because of the Olympics. That's what happened. The Winter Olympics happened. But Oscars looking, they reached out to Tom Holland, Pete Davidson, apparently individually to host. I think they could use a host. I think the no host thing is kind of old hat now. I think it played itself out. I think have a host, have somebody funny, have something entertaining. I think the awards are going to be kind of gassy this year. I mean, I thought Power of the Dog was a very, very good movie, very solidly made, well acted, all that shit. But for it to just kind of possibly just sweep through things, that's just kind of a, you know, you want the Oscar have some pomp. Parasite did that. Now the ratings weren't huge, but like it's cool to see other things rewarded. But I mean, Tom Holland will be fun. Tom Holland will get people to watch. I'll tell you that right now.
That's for sure.
That was my idea, and I can't believe I hadn't thought about it before. Every year they should just get somebody who is attached to like the biggest movie of that year to host. Like 2 years ago, they should have just gotten the five Avengers to just co-host it.
They thought about it.
Did they think about like that? Like in this year,
it was all come out at one point too. That was their idea.
Yeah, they should. In this year, don't just have Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield, and Tobey Maguire like co-host together. Especially Andrew Garfield can sing now, like super talented. Everybody saw them. Like now, in general, to me, the biggest issue with the Oscars has never been whether or not they have a host. The show is fucking 4 hours. Like they have musical numbers, like for no, they really got to be done with that.
Remember they ended with Best Actor last year because they thought Chadwick Boseman
and the wrong guy won. And they, or not the wrong guy, but the guy they did not think would win. It's a mess. And it looked like I know it was COVID, but it looked like it was being filmed at like a Vegas lounge. Like, I mean, it was just a horribly put together program, and it usually is. Like, and I look, if you go back and watch old Oscar speeches, like people literally just go up there and say thank you and they would walk off.
Ken Jack, what's the best one? Come on.
The best Oscar speech?
Joe Pesci? Yeah.
Joe Pesci,
there words. It is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
George C. Scott just not showing up and being like, I don't want to reward this, like this skin flabby display. I forget. He said something very funny. I forget what it was.
What does Pesci say, Eddie? Remind me.
It was my privilege. Thank you.
That's why he was the greatest, though. Like, I don't know. You know, to me, like, the entire show is going to need a revamp. And, you know, I don't know. Ever since that South Park episode where they talk about George Clooney, the smug speech, like, it feels like every speech has to matter. It's like you're a fucking actor. Just talk, like, whatever. I don't know. I could literally fill a 4-hour podcast about how
much
I hate
when Leo won and he just did like environmental stuff in his speech and didn't like,
nothing
which
worse.
Is fine.
Because like The Revenant was shot outside, therefore like, you know, environments, like people find these loose connections to shit.
Not Joe Quinn Phoenix fucking with the milk.
You talked about cow's milk.
Wait, Joe Quinn Phoenix? Is that?
Yeah, I did that on a dozen once.
He does it on a dozen.
That's amazing.
Joe Quinn Phoenix and he hit him with the Mark Ruffalo.
I love that too. That's the party goer version of Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
I
would have those guys do it.
Yeah, I think they just got to have someone. Eddie, I'm going to give you Eddie. You're the head of the Academy. I'm giving you three people right here. You got to say yes or no, split second. If you think they should be ready,
I'm ready.
Here we go.
Don't say the Jokers. People who hosted SNL this weekend.
The Impractical Jokers.
No,
man. That's the one thing I know with no Joe Gatto, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I fucking love that. That would be incredible host of the Oscars. No one would like it, but like it would be amazing.
But we would. Like there would be a crossover audience there. Yeah,
exactly.
All right. Moving on. A24's X. This was a fucking wild trailer. This comes out March 18th, 2022. At a secluded farmhouse in Texas, a film crew arrives to shoot an adult film. Their hosts, a reclusive elderly couple, take special interest in their young guests. As night falls, the couple's leering interests turn violent. It is a bonkers fucking trailer. Sick poster. Mia Goth, Kid Cudi credited as Scott Muscudi, by the way. Jenna Ortega, Brittany Snow. I'll tell you what. Very excited for this movie. Some of like the way like visually it looks A24, but I was surprised it was A24. This is a crazy fucking trailer. Also from Bronze Studios, which does a lot of these types of movies as well. Man, this looks fucking, this looks really, I really hope this is good. I really hope this is good. Ken Jack, what do you think of the trailer?
Yeah, when I finished the trailer, I think the first thing I thought of was just how it didn't feel like something that A24 is usually associated with, as far as like movies go. It's very more like a traditional jump scary horror. That's just based off the trailer. The actual movie could be totally different, but the way that that was thrown together felt very, I don't know how to put it, like Gen Pop versus A24, which is more art housey horror. That said, I do love the idea. I like including the world of sex and horror, because the two kind of like they're running in this parallel lanes essentially, and I think that that's a very smart move, and I like the cast. So, you know, I don't know, I'm excited to watch it. I will say the trailer did not do a ton for me as far as like the way I watch, like it didn't feel A24 to me, which again not necessarily could be a bad thing or a good thing, but we'll see.
Eddie, you're a horror guy. Man.
The old farmhouse, the old people, the porno, I'm all in. You know, I'm all in.
What's more important to you, the old farmhouse or the old people?
Well, that got me. You know, the farmhouse, like, you see that? It was big-time Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibes I had. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy shit, like, this is, I like where this is going. And, I'm happy it's, like, bit highly anticipated March movie for me now. This looks pretty good.
I don't know how I'm gonna feel about this because I'm not a huge horror guy. But the one thing, and you just brought it up, Eddie, this looks more like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie than any of the recent Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies. Like, they have that feel down. Like, there's an actual. I think a lot of A24 movies do such a great job of this, of like having an honest like grit to them. Like, this movie looks very kind of, you know, grungy and dirty and kind of gross, which I, you know, that's fucking bunch of old people on a farm making pornos. Like, it shouldn't look like fucking Care Bears. I mean, it's a neat looking movie. Conceptually, it seems like it's a neat trailer. I don't know how I'll feel about it, but like, I appreciate the fact that like A24, regardless, and there's A24 movies I'm not crazy about, but like as a studio, they're like one of the last ones. It seems like they're actually pushing the limits of this art form, which I really appreciate. Like, I know I think I probably liked it a little bit less than you guys did, but like The Green Knight was a movie that I didn't love but really appreciated, and to me David Lowery's gotten like way overlooked for best director. I like that movie, looks incredible, and I think most of that studio's movies do. So yeah, I have a feeling this will probably end up being really well received. I don't think it'll do particularly well financially, but that's not really what A24 cares about. It's a very low budget film. I think it'll be received well. So yeah, good job.
And lastly, Leslie Grace, first look as Batgirl. That is a pretty cool costume in my opinion. And it's cool because it's the comic version of the costume, basically. Very comic accurate. People very excited. I think some people were curious as to why it looked like it'd be like, that's cartoony. That's the comic accurate. It's always kind of cool to see. They gave it a whirl. What did you guys think about the costume? Chris?
I'm going to pull a Harrison Ford here. I don't care. I don't know what it is. I'm not saying it looks bad. But for some reason, they've been trying to make a Batgirl movie for like 25 years. And I'm going to see it. And I hope it's good. And I'm not saying it looks awful. It's one photo. But there's something about this. And maybe it's the fact that Joss Whedon was connected to this for so long. I just am not that, like, is anyone that interested in this? Like, I don't really get it. I think, is Michael Keaton, like, confirmed to be in this, right? Like, they're going to, you know. Michael Keaton is, you know, 70 years old, is going to be playing Batman again. Yep. Like,
Brendan Fraser's the villain, Firefly.
Okay. All right, fine. In that case,
obviously it's her dad.
In that case, those two guys that you just named, now I'm a little bit intrigued. Okay, that's cool. But I need to see more from this before I'm like, okay, this might be good. I mean, it took me a long time. Now, in fairness, I remember when Wonder Woman was being marketed, the first one. The second one stinks, but the first one, and thinking, I think this doesn't look very good, I don't think it's going to do well. It was a $1 billion movie that I quite enjoyed. You know, trailers lie, production stills lie. One of my worst takes ever on a movie was I was so confident that the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie was going to suck. It was one of my favorite movies of the decade. So I'm not that intrigued by this yet, but for one photo, yeah, it's cool looking costume. It's fine. You know, but I'm just not crazy about this idea. I'm just not that interested in it.
I like the comic accurate costume. I thought that was kind of like a cool wrinkle on it, because like even when we were watching like a Loki, when they had like the old Loki and like the OG costumes, like that stuff's always cool to me. It will always play. I'll agree with you in that, like, my interest, it always wanes, especially in DC when you get outside of like the main big characters, but I'm also always going to be open-minded, because like
for sure.
Look at like Marvel or DC or any of these guys, like the characters outside of the big ones are the ones that I think I've grown to like the most. Like, I had never heard of Guardians of the Galaxy before Marvel made those movies, and they're like my favorite. Like Iron Man, not somebody I'd really heard of at all. And then like, he's like one of the biggest. And like, that's, I think that there's a lot more room to run, because like when we watch like a Batman or a Superman movie, there's so much tread on those tires. Everything is always going to be relative. But like when you have no expectations going into something like it does definitely makes it a little bit easier. Now, Batgirl, not necessarily that case. Batgirl's been around for a while, but like still, I mean, like what's your movie comp? Like Alicia Silverstone and like not even there's not a ton to really base off from a relative standpoint. So a lot of room to run.
That is true. The popularity of a character can completely adjust based on the popularity of their film. I mean, you brought up the prime example. Like I think most people didn't know Iron Man was even a comic book character before 2008. And he became, that movie not just became a smash hit, but like that character defined 11 years of filmmaking. So look, I do hope this is good. I'm sure I'm sounding cynical as I often do, but like I really want this to work. I hope it does.
Eddie, not a big comic book guy, but yeah, come on, Brendan Fraser involvement, that's got to be.
I'll be honest, that's the only thing that really intrigues me. Like I my comment on this was going to be I have no opinion, but right when you said that Brendan Fraser is involved, I am intrigued for sure.
See, Hollywood,
he puts my ass in the seat.
See, Hollywood, this is what you do.
How you get the common man involved.
This is
what you know what doing. That's who should host the fucking Oscars.
Yeah, seriously.
Get him and get Nicolas Cage together, the comeback kids, and have them host the Oscars. That'll be a massive success.
Mm-hmm. Would be incredible. That's it for news. Interview with Judy Greer. Got to talk to her about a bunch of things. Her new project with Audible, as well as Arrested Development, the Planet of the Apes franchise. She tells an Oscars story. Here's our interview. All right, we're joined today by Judy Greer. Thanks for joining us. We are, as always, whenever we do this, we typically talk about backgrounds. If you're listening to this, Ken Jack has like the green screen background that Zoom has, which is just a globe. You're in the
Universal logo. Yeah.
You're in a very nice looking room with some paintings behind you.
Oh,
I'm the loser here. I lost. I blew it.
It's, you know what? It's clean. It's simple. I'm focusing on your face only.
Not always a good thing. That's okay. That's...
You look very well groomed today. I like your hair. It looks great.
Okay, there you go. That's all. I only do is to fish for compliments. That's what I do. Lot to get to today, but let's start off the top. Okay. Audible scripted comedy, Self-Centered, debuted today. This is airing on Sunday, by the way. This is a Sunday.
Already aired.
You probably already listened to it.
So there you go. You, Kim Cattrall, Jane Lynch. Let me read the synopsis, and then you can dive in and tell me if the synopsis is worthy of being read.
Okay.
Tells the story of a woman, played by you, who goes to a weekend retreat hosted by a model turned wellness thought leader, played by Kim Cattrall. But what's supposed to be a fun getaway quickly turns into one saw-like torture after another, where anything can happen. Good. I didn't write that, but
I know you didn't, because I have the same one that someone sent to me. I was like, I wonder if he's gonna have like new things added to the
We read one the other day.
Oh, that one was tough.
It was a synopsis for somebody, and it was almost like somebody hacked the document and then just scrambled the words. Because I was reading it live. I'm like, this doesn't seem right. This isn't even English.
No, that was what I had.
What in your own words, though, what can you tell about this project?
Right. Well, I'm always going to come to a synopsis of a project I'm in probably through the lens of my character. So, you know, to me, this is a woman entering her 40s who has up until now successfully tried to ignore the zeitgeist of like, you must be better, you must be thinner, you must be younger, you must look prettier, you must have this and that. And now she finds herself jumping in headfirst into this world of self-empowerment, self-improvement, self-love. But it's all really, it's a comedy horror comedy, which I'm realizing is my favorite genre now. And, you know, it's all under the guise of this guru essentially like sucking the life out of people so that she can continue being young.
You've done voice work in the past too, but what's different about a project? We always like, because we've done plenty of interviews with people who have an Audible original. They've done voice work, but it's different because the voice work, there is no physical form anywhere to kind of put off all the comedy. So you have to do a lot of the visual comedy through your voice.
Yeah. They add in sound effects, so that's cool. But I would say that it's a little harder to cheat. Like, it's a little harder. I know that there's no editor that's going to like cut away to the other actor, or I can like really lose myself in like the comedy of a prop, which I might do if I'm like flailing in a scene in a movie or a TV show. And in this, like, sometimes I'll think that I'm like, hey, come on, let's go and try and see what's happening. And they'll be like, we need you to do it again with a little more energy. And I'm like, more energy than that? Because they can hear that it's like super forced and I'm actually exhausted. And that's not a lot of energy. That's just loud. So then, you know, I think there's like some cheating that cannot happen. I mean, I don't have to go through hair and makeup for 2 hours and I can literally wear pajamas, but you can't fake energy. So I guess I'm obsessed with energy.
Sounds like actually the Kim Cattrall character in this. Yeah.
Yes.
We talked about it with someone recently that were they were promoting an Audible original as well. And something that I think is kind of cool about these is that every listener has their own unique experience because everyone has their own different imagination, right? Like if you and me watch like a movie, like we've seen the same thing. Okay, so you think everyone has their own same thing.
We're all robots.
We all think the same thing. No, that's what's so well, that's the same thing. I mean, obviously, like Audible started as audiobooks only, which is like such an exciting transition for them to be making, or I should say, addition to having like its own content and to be doing these scripted series, because you're right, like I've been a reader my whole life. Like when I was a child, my parents told my babysitters, like, she's not allowed to sit and read. She has to go out and play. So they would take books away from me. So I come from a family of big readers. My mind is always working. I use my imagination all the time. And I really love that escape. And when I discovered Audible, gosh, like 12 years ago, I moved far away and had a long commute. And it was a gifted to me, a year subscription by my manager. And I was like, this is magic. I can still read, but I can also be stuck in traffic on the 101. And it changed my life. And I was still able to use my imagination. And so then to like, be able to help contribute to like people discovering this, like these obviously original works, but like to kind of start, like people are now listening to audiobooks a lot more. And I think it's really cool because there's a lot of people out there who can't, I mean, like one author, I actually did his audiobook, Max Brooks. He's amazing. He wrote World War Z and Devolution. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Anyway, he has a great story. He grew up and he was very dyslexic and reading was really hard for him. And he is a genius. and discovered audiobooks and was able to take in more books than most readers because he could listen to them. And I don't really think there's any difference. And I think you're right. What's cool is being able to use your imagination. I feel like I've been talking for an hour. I'm so sorry. But you know, to use your imagination, yes, everyone will imagine a character differently. Everyone will see the background differently, the world differently. And what's so funny is when you are a reader and your favorite book gets turned into a movie and you go see it, you're like, no,
yep,
that's not
that
right.
Harry Potter as that a kid. Is, every movie.
Yeah, that's not Harry Potter. Like my hair, you know, and I think that that's one of the fun things about listening again and still for some is that, you know, we can use our, we're perfectly casting every book and every original, and you know, they're in the most perfect locations and they're wearing exactly what they should be wearing and all that stuff.
That's you literally just described me, by the way. You just described, like, we talk on this podcast all the time. I'm a movie first person. My reading comprehension level is it's so low. It's just funny at this point. So But Dune, I really wanted to read Dune very badly, which in my head, by the way, I cast Timothée Chalamet in the lead role. No, not to brag, but that's just how I had it. So
cast him in every lead role, not to brag, but okay.
I opened it up and I got like three lines in and I was like, nah, we're doing audiobook. I can't do this. I had no chance. So yeah, I did the same thing. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll read a second book. Maybe this would be this, and now I'll read another book after that.
2022 is a year of new beginnings. Maybe we'll turn you into a reader.
Which I did. I was supposed to start reading it in December, and then it turned the page to the new year. I'm like, no, this is just a new year resolution. Now this is great. This works.
Yeah.
Well, was this story inspired, though, by anything specific? Because like, there are a lot of like wellness cults out there, and even just like the age of social media, it's these types of things and people and stories,
Of course it was. But I don't know if I mean, yes, there's tons of them. There's like a big one with a big movie star who is, you know, the owner of it. I think that maybe started the ball rolling. But you know, there's something for everyone in this space. You know, there's like for people who are Christian, there's like the Christian blogger, perfect mom, wife, woman that the people follow. There's, you know, there's the person I'm thinking of in my head. There's the, you know, the vegan perfection woman who like, there's some, like whatever, wherever you find yourself, there's a guru for you. And so as we're all losing our minds and I think trying to like this thing about, you know, trying to stay young, trying to stay relevant, but also being true to myself. Like, I don't know. I think everyone's getting really swept up in like self-care and the self-love movement. And so we're kind of poking a little bit of fun of that, especially saying like, oh, in order to change your life and make you only rely on yourself and love yourself just the way you are, you should do this cleanse and use these products and buy this these items that cost thousands of dollars. And it's so ridiculous and so unattainable. And that to me was hilarious. And I find myself like getting caught up in it constantly and like having to sort of like shake myself and be like, no, stop, close your computer, walk away.
It's getting away from the perfection. I love that. So you and Kim and also Jane Lynch are also like, I think three of the best just funniest actresses in the game, really.
Finish your thought.
Sorry, I will go on. Did you guys get a chance to like work with each other in the studio at all? Or was this all done like separately throughout the time?
Just like this.
Oh, I love that.
I looked at their tiny little faces and tiny little boxes on a laptop, but I'll take it. And I was still super starstruck. We recorded this a year ago. So January, we all remember how insane January was. And it was a time when I think it was a scary time, like politically in this country. You know, we're like almost a year into a pandemic. The vaccines weren't out for everyone yet. And I needed this so badly. I needed to do something fun and silly and funny. And imagine that, like, to yank myself out of the spiral I'm sure we all found ourselves in. I got to go and like talk on the phone essentially to Jane Lynch and Kim Cattrall and have fun for a week. I was like losing my mind. It was so awesome. And I was so excited to work with both of them.
Pretty easy thing to say yes to, just hang on the phone with them. And just talk.
Yeah. I know.
Like in a world where you're so, like in that time where you're forced to be on the computer with people anyway, it's like, may as well make it people worth being.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hello. Yeah, it was, I mean, I would love to have done it in person. And this is as everything else, second best, you know.
Self-Center, Audible, out now if you're listening. You got to talk about a couple of your other stuff too. You are my favorite show of all time, Arrested Development. I have to talk about Arrested Development. We've interviewed Tony Hale. We've talked to Ron Howard. So we've had some alums. Anyone else? I don't think so. Maybe some guest stars.
Yeah, guest stars. Yeah.
So I'll start with the big one. I have to get a favorite moment from Arrested Development from you.
Oh.
Which is an impossible thing to do.
I know. Well, my answer has changed since the passing of Jessica Walter. My first moments on set with Will Arnett with the hair down, glasses and all that was like burned in my brain. Like if I experience dementia, I think I'll always remember that. It's just so awful that anyway. So I would say my favorite is my drinking contest. With I like always think of Mallory, my drinking contest with Jessica would probably go down as my favorite moment. Because
I mean, she opens the show. Just the light my hair on fire comment is just it just sets such a tone that never lets up.
She's just impeccable with every single thing she ever did. It was like I bet the editors like, oh yeah, we just could use anything, even when the camera started rolling but they haven't started actually acting yet, like I'm sure you could use what Jessica was saying. Because one time we were in San Diego for Comic-Con for Archer and our hotel rooms weren't ready and we all went to the restaurant to wait it out and Jessica was already in there, so we sat down with her and we were like, oh hey, can we sit with you? And like the look on her face for a split second was like, oh. Which you want from her, like, and then she was like, yes, of course. And then she kept asking the waiter if her room was ready, and he kept saying like, I don't work for the hotel, I work for the restaurant. And she's like, yes, but surely you can find out if my room is ready. And it was like, while she was the most loving, wonderful peach, like there was a little bit of that in her, which you want.
Life imitates art. It has to sometimes.
I mean, come on. Are any of us that good? She's just like the best. And I remember recently watching someone showed me that scene. I guess I was doing, I don't know, we were talking about her and that scene came up in the interview. And I was like, oh yeah, that's badass.
The other question we always like to ask, and you actually have a pretty big connection because you were in Marvel movies, is the Russo's question is that one of those crazier things to look back on and realize that the Russo brothers were involved in Arrested Development, obviously so much involved in it, and be like, could you have imagined back then that those guys would have their hands on the highest grossing movie ever?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's everyone always says yes to. That's the thing. They're like, it does not shock us at all.
Mm-hmm. There's nowhere in the world those two should be. I mean, maybe their kids would beg to differ, but and wives, but then on a set. Like they are the coolest and they're so, well, look, I haven't worked with them in a long time, but man, they were so kind, so lovely, so funny, such hard workers. I'm a real sucker for professionalism and hard work and they were just incredible. It doesn't surprise me at all. And like, I don't know, you just like them. Like you want to be around them. I'm really happy. It makes me so happy that when you know, these jobs, like I started doing this over 20 years ago. And so to see the people that have had such great success, and I, you know, gratefully include myself in that. Like, I just feel like, oh my God, like, right. Like the good, like the cream does rise to the top. The good people really do keep working and keep creating and keep having success. And that's such a great, it's great to see.
We'd love to talk to you about some of your other stuff too, as well as including Descendants, The Descendants, which we loved, one of our favorite movies, I think. And so just, it's one of those things where it must have been great for you. You know, you get to go to Hawaii, work with George Clooney, and we're in just an incredible experience, I'm sure. But one of the funniest stories I had read, I remember, was from actually your book of essays where you talk about your Oscars experience, which seems like it was a little bit of a disaster, right?
Yes. Yes, it was awful. Like as soon as I stepped on the red carpet, I had this dress that was, it was beaded down the, like a stripe of beading down the front, a stripe of beading down the back. And as soon as I stepped on the red carpet, someone stepped on my dress and yanked the beads, and the beads all started to pour down. Now, the red carpet at the Oscars is like the scariest thing I've ever experienced. I am not a red carpet lover. There are actors and entertainers who love a red carpet and they kill it. And they just I should be taking beta blockers. I don't have any, but I don't understand like how people can stand there and just be like, so for any pretty picture you see of me on a red carpet, there's 75 where I'm like, So my dress started unraveling in front of me. My publicist, who wasn't even my publicist, because there's a whole other thing I won't get into about having credentials to even be on the red carpet. So sometimes the people you work with every single day they're not getting those red carpet credentials. So then a different person you've never met is walking you down the red carpet. And that's also scary because now you're just there by yourself. People are screaming your names. They're much more excited about the super famous person in front of you and the more famous person behind you than you, but they have to say your name and they have to get your picture. My dress is unraveling. This publicist I didn't know very well was like trying to sew it up on the red carpet. There's cameras everywhere. I'm getting screamed at. I'm trying to move along. I'm just praying that the beads like manage to stay together so I can get inside and deal with it. And then because the red carpet's so crazy and there's not many people allowed on it, as soon as it was over, my publicist is like, okay, I have to go and meet another client. Have fun. And I'm by myself and I'm walking into the Kodak Theater, which I don't know if it's still called that. It was like massive place. I'm just standing there by myself. I mean, how scary is it to walk into just a party at your friend's house by yourself? Like that is enough to give me anxiety. Imagine the Academy Awards, you know? And so like, I don't know where to go. I'm usually like, I'll just go to the bar, but like, I don't even know where anything is. And I'm by myself and I don't see anyone and I'm standing there and I'm terrified and I'm like, so nervous. And I'm like, of course, thank God for cell phones sometimes, right? You're like, I'll just stand at this cocktail table and text. And anyway, so finally, my friend Ariane Phillips, who was nominated for best costume designer that year, walked in and saved my life. Rose Byrne also walked in and also saved my life and got to chat with them. And then it was time to go and do something that I always do, which is take my Spanx off after the red carpet because they're really gross and tight and I hate them, but they do make for a prettier picture, I'll be honest. not that everyone needs it. I just like it. It's my own choice. Anyway, so I go in the bathroom. I have to take my dress off completely because of the way that it's like fit to my body. Take my Spanx off, put my dress back on, zip it up myself. Thanks, yoga. And I go in, I meet Shailene Woodley. We decide to walk in together. We walk through the front row and there's like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie and all the biggest stars are sitting in the front row. And I'm like chatting with them and everything. And I look back many rows farther and my friend Susan Mischer is sitting back there and she's like looking at me and pointing at her phone. And I'm like, hi, yeah, I know I'm here. And she's kind of looking sort of panicked. And I get to my seat and I look at my phone and she texted like, your lingerie straps are hanging out of the side of your dress. I'm going to assume everyone knows what a lingerie strap is. It's like the little strap that helps the garment hang on the hanger. Usually I cut them out, so that never happens. And trust me, I have cut every lingerie strap out of every garment that I've owned ever since that night, but they're hanging out of my dress under my arm. So when I'm like chatting with people and oh my God, I just like, it was, there was nothing that could go right for me in the first hour. Oh, that's another thing. Because I'm not super famous, I have to arrive. Like, it felt like a day early. Like, you have time.
People forget the carpet starts so early for them.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. If you're watching the Academy Awards, let's say they start at 6 p.m. Trust me, people have been on that carpet since 3. Like, probably I was in, like, the early group. And same, another thing people don't realize, like, the Vanity Fair Oscar party, which is, like, the party you want to go to, or at least it used to be, like, you have a time when you're allowed to arrive, and they do not let you in before that. And you can always tell how famous you are by your timing. Like, if you're allowed to arrive at like 8 p.m., you're really famous. My arrival time is usually around 10:45, 11:30. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I didn't even like want to go that early anyway. But yeah, the whole Oscars, the Oscars from the inside is a very different experience than the Oscars from the outside.
I think yours may be when Sacha Baron Cohen dumped ashes on Ryan Seacrest. That might be like the 1A, 1B.
Yeah.
Which yeah, might be the most mad I've ever seen somebody on TV before, but it was quite the funny moment.
I just can't get mad at him for anything he does. I want to sometimes, but God, it's always so funny and comedy wins, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Two quick things before you go. Two daunting questions. And surprisingly, I'm sure, no, it's not Ant-Man or Halloween related. The first one is, quick, what's the better performance from Andy Serkis? Is it Planet of the Apes or is it Dancing to Thriller and 13 Going on 30? What's the better job?
I mean, Caesar, but I like... I'm a real fan of the franchise, guys. Like, I actually have,
amazing.
I have a tattoo on my arm. I don't know if you can see it. It's so tiny. It's Caesar's window.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
It's Caesar's. It's so tiny. I'm sorry you had to see also that angle of my arm, but also it's Caesar's window from Planet of the Apes. So I love Andy's face. I love his face. So Dancing Thriller with him was really kick-ass, and people forget what an amazing actor, like just as a human man, he can be. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Last thing, this is daunting. Everyone gets mad at us because we do this so quickly. We need you to pick 6 movies. Could be your 6 favorite movies.
Okay.
Could be 6 movies you've seen recently. Could be guilty pleasures. Anything. Something maybe you want people to see more, but we put you on the spot.
Okay.
You got to pick 6 movies.
I'm ready. Moonstruck, Tootsie, Almost Famous, The Big Lebowski, Pretty in Pink, and Citizen Ruth.
That was way too good.
That was amazing. It was really fast. It's like someone prepared you for this.
No one did.
That was pretty impressive.
I would have been more angry if you would have said 3, actually.
I think 6 is the perfect number, because 5, I think a top 5 is easy, but you always have that one you want to mention. So I think 6 is the,
I think that my 6th one is technically Pretty in Pink, but that was
the Citizen Ruth, man. Laura Dern, I mean, she has to make the list there somewhere for sure. That's an amazing pull.
Yes, that movie blew my mind. That movie probably is what made, like, pushed me to like stick with acting and stuff. When I saw it, I was like, oh, okay.
You left us enough time to say that. I like that you said how big of a fan you are of just the Planet of the Apes franchise in general, those 3 movies, because especially the last 2, people ask, like, how confident are you in the Batman movie being good? It's like, well, Matt Reeves did a pretty damn good job with Planet of the Apes. So yeah. I think it's, I have like no concerns. Like,
yeah,
to do
yeah,
those, to do those movies as well as he did, it's like, come on.
Yeah, he's a genius. And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was like a career highlight for me. And it will be forever. It was an unbelievable experience. And I got to go to ape school. So hello.
That's a pretty cool thing. Self-Center on Audible. Thank you so much. Love to talk to you. We could, so many more things we could have talked about. This is an absolute
blast. We'll do it again.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Well, Thank you. When Reboots comes out. I'm very, very excited for that on Hulu. God.
I'm so excited too, because I just want to say really fast that I haven't gotten to do a straight up comedy in so long, and I need it, and I'm excited. So we'll talk about that.
Awesome.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
All right. We also had another interview last week. We can't air till March, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can say who it is.
Yeah.
Cool interview, though. 2000s.
Yeah, big, I think 2000s.
Star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
big 2000s star.
Early 2000s star. Does he have a big movie coming out soon?
I'll just bleep it.
Yeah.
Oh fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm. I knew you'd that, Eddie. Yeah, it was a very interesting interview. And I mean that in a good way. It was very open and honest about a lot of stuff. So that was neat. Scream. Time to talk Scream. The fifth Scream movie, 25 years after a streak of brutal murders shocked the quiet town of Woodsboro, a new killer has donned the Ghostface mask and begins targeting a group of teenagers to resurrect secrets from the town's deadly past. Again, fifth movie. For context, I'll give a little context. Oh, I do want to note, actually, this was from news. Adil El Arbi and Bilal Fly, I butchered their names there. They're directing Batgirl. They're doing Beverly Hills Cop 4. They did Bad Boys for Life, which ended up being a movie that like had staying powers, like one of the more movies of the year. It came out like I think January, February. They're also doing Ms. Marvel as well. For Disney. They're directing Batgirl. So that is worth noting. They've had some good stuff. A lot of people trusting them in a bunch of areas. So yeah, I think that's a thing to know. For context, Scream franchise, Ken Jack, here are your scores. I will obviously include the new one. You rank them Scream 2, Scream 3, Scream 4. Scream 2, you have 68 out of 100, original Scream 81, and then 20s for the other two. Context for myself, 86 original Scream, and then Scream 2, Scream 4, Scream 3. I have Scream 2, 75, others in the 30s. New Scream movie. You get back the original surviving people from... You even get back people who are dead,
mm-hmm.
kind of. You get back original people from the Scream franchise. Again, very Force Awakens-y. You have Courtney Cox. You obviously have Neve Campbell back as Sidney Prescott, one of the all-time horror characters. Sidney Prescott is just a perfect horror movie character. Whether the movie's good or not is one thing, but that's just such an amazing character. And then, of course, come on, David Arquette. Alum, LCB interview alum, David Arquette as Dewey.
Mm-hmm. What an interview that was.
Gail, Dewey, and Sidney all back. You have a couple of recognizable people. As the kids, Melissa Barrera, who we recently saw in the Heights, Jack Quaid, who people
King.
A lot of different things as of late, but obviously, you know,
parents the boys. Are
very famous, Dennis Quaid, Meg Ryan, it's, you know, pretty important thing. Yeah, the boys, which I
not the only adult son actor in this movie, by the way. I don't know if you knew this, but Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son is in this movie.
Mason which Gooding. Is
bizarre. Like I did not pick up on it at all until I was just reading the Wikipedia after. I was like, what the fuck? This guy's an actor. This is awesome.
Which I actually didn't know he was in. He was also in Booksmart, but he was in Picard. I didn't realize.
I didn't watch
the Picard show. So
nearby.
Only person to be in Picard and the Good Doctor, Jenna Ortega. So here's my thoughts in this movie. I had a very enjoyable time with it. I got to see it again. I had a lot of fun. I thought it wasn't, it had a lull at one point. I thought early on, I thought it got going in the classic Scream way. I thought, all right, a little bit to get going here. But I thought when it got going, I thought the dialogue was a lot of fun. I thought the script was very enjoyable. I thought, you know what? Good enough mystery here satisfies that end of things. As always with Scream, very self-referential, very meta. I thought they had a perfect way to make to give a quote unquote excuse to make this movie. As I referenced earlier, it's like, why did they make it? You know what? We just reviewed a self-referential movie. What was it?
Matrix.
Cherry. Matrix. Oh yeah, Matrix.
duh, literally the most meta movie ever. Not as meta as The Matrix, though. You could, though, in a way,
kind of is. It was pretty fucking meta.
Scream 2 was just like, I mean, Scream 2, they made a movie called Stab. So very meta, but that, I mean, that is what Scream are. Scream is, and actually Chris Stuckman said this in his review on this, Scream is really, it's one of the few like surviving horror comedy things out there. It is in that sense. Oh, there's a lot of like very funny moments, whether it was just timing with what shows up on screen or timing and dialogue and delivery. Look, it's not perfect. It's a movie I imagine I'll see again and grade a little lower. But you know what? Out of the gates, there's always one easy 80, and that's it for me. So open up 2022, though 355 did not like. Didn't think that was very good.
That one was a stoinker.
We reviewed on here, Scream 80 out of 100 out of the gates for me. I don't know. Like, I really enjoyed this movie. Plenty of faults, but for what it was, cleared the bar and a little more. Ken Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really, really dug the movie for what it was. I'm just a little bit lower than you. I'm a 72 out of 100 on this. And like, it's a movie where you can definitely give it a lot of points for the meta commentary. That's obviously like the hallmark of the Scream franchise. But like, you also, I feel like it's very like, it was a, you have to be objective in how you make sure you don't let them use it as a shield for doing what they criticize. Mm-hmm. So like, that's where I kind of fell on it. And like, at least on the acting end, like Neve Campbell, Arquette, Quaid, and Mikey Madison, I think those were the four that really stood out to me a ton. I think like all the old cast members really slid into their old stuff like really, really easily and just gave it like that punch of like legitimacy. And I think that both Jack Quaid and Mikey Madison were fantastic in how they handled like the normal disarming part of their roles, but then also the unhinged psycho parts of it. The only casting where I had a little bit of like a question mark with it was Melissa Barrera in the lead role. And I have a theory as to why. And I think that there's certain actors and actresses that just can't act using their eyes. And I think Oscar Isaac's a good example of that. And I just don't think Barrera can act with her eyes. And that hurts when you're in a role where your screams are and expressions of fear are so important and she just can't do it. And it gets for, it doesn't mean you're like going to be a bad actor or whatever else like that. I think she's great in The Heights, but like it just for this specific sort of role, I think it hurt a little bit. As far as the plot goes, it's dumb, sure, but like it has the brutal kills, funny lines, some good dialogue. The meta jokes were funny, and I like their take on like toxic fandom because like hearing like the other side of it, I thought was kind of funny. But like they make the jokes about how, you know, reboots and all that are like cash grabs designed to make money, yada yada yada. And like I feel like the way that they discuss it is as if they that's not exactly what they're doing. Like this movie is a cash grab. Like it's like every other horror reboot. It's made because horror is a bulletproof genre from a financial standpoint, especially in an established franchise. And like that part to me was like a little bit like, oh, well, come on, like you're doing what you're making fun of at the same time. And like that's where like I found the, you know, the four Wests at the end of it to be a little bit cringy. But like other than that, like nothing crazy. The fake jump scares was the part that stood out to me as being the funniest. I was laughing out loud at that one scene of that kid, just constantly like queuing up the jump scares. But overall, very enjoyable for what it's worth. I really, really liked it for what it was.
Chris, where do you stand?
I shouldn't like this at all. It has a bunch of things I don't like. It has like jump scares are like I'm not a fan of jump scares. Actually, I think I talked about this in the Yak. I walked out of a movie in 2021 because I had too many jump scares. That's how much it wasn't even a terrible movie. I was just so annoyed.
Do you get
by
scared by jump scares?
No, jump scares aren't scary, but like, you know, I don't like loud things in my face that don't scare me. They're annoying to me. So I don't like being annoyed.
Yeah, that's fair.
What movie was it?
Last Night in Soho. Which I didn't even dislike it, but I was just like, I said, if there's one more fucking jump scare in this movie, I'm walking out.
You walked out.
And I walked out. I was the only guy in the theater and I walked out. They might've stopped the movie after I left. But no. Okay. And the other thing,
Hold on. Did you see that viral thing about the movie theater? That one movie theater, like people rented out a theater and it's such a dumb fucking TikTok or Reels caption too. Like, this is how they do movies in movie theaters. And they, it was like a projector, but they were on Amazon Prime selecting the movie. And you saw the menu on the big screen. They were like on somebody's Prime account. Or it was like Hulu, but they went to play The Grinch, and then it was too many logins are using this account right now, so they couldn't play the movie on the big screen. It was so fucking
wow, crazy. Really?
That just reminded me of that. Anyway, continue. Yeah, no, good laugh.
You know what's funny to me is since I started doing this podcast, this has become a running theme with Ghostbusters, Matrix, and now this. And I've just realized, like, I can't stand meta shit. Now, you cannot criticize Scream for that, because Scream kind of, like, almost invented that. Like, the original Scream, all of them are famous for deconstructing not just their own narratives, but deconstructing the narratives of other films. And yet, while watching the movie, I wasn't crazy about it. But when it ended, I just went, oh, it was all right. Yeah, I have this. Anything 60 or above for me is a movie I recommend in some capacity, whether it be in theaters or at home. I got this at an even 60. Like, I do actually, I don't know how, but I do kind of like this. And I think a big reason is the fact that, unlike Ghostbusters, the returning cast in this is actually really good. And I'm happy I can say this, because I know you guys did a great interview with him. David Arquette's great. Like, he actually gives a really good performance. Like, he almost feels like he's stuck out of place here, because he's really acting. Here's the difference. Is back in 1996, and this is my complaint.
I want to hop off that quick. I liked him texting Gail was a
very funny moment.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I like that a lot.
Here's my big issue with it, though, is that back in 1996, before meta shit got beaten into the fucking ground, we didn't really have like social media and stuff like that where people talked about this. I'm sure toxic fandom always existed, but not in the way that it does today. And so much of the commentary that they have on horror movies, sequels, reboots, etc., are literally things I've read people say on Twitter. Like, it's not clever. A lot of it's just references. And outside of Melissa Barrera's character and Jack Quaid's character, all the main cast is really just their plot devices that lead to meta references. And I didn't find the movie. I thought most of the comedic stuff in this movie did not work for me, but I kept sticking with it, and the stuff in it I didn't like, I really hated. But I couldn't help but come away from it thinking this should have been way worse. Like, do you guys agree with me on that? That mm-hmm. This is a January horror film. It's right, the
which
fourth,
was my biggest concern.
Right. It's the fourth sequel to a series that I know a lot of people really like the second one. I know people who like all these movies, but hasn't had like a really well-received film since, you know, the late 90s. And yet, and not to mention Wes Craven, who, like, you know, conceived this whole thing, passed away several years ago. So it's a new director, new cast, new everything, essentially. And, like, I don't know. There was something about it I appreciated, just the fact that, yeah, this could have been the equivalent of one of the Platinum Dunes remakes, or the, you know, the Texas Chainsaw, a movie that they did with Alexander Daddario several years ago. Like, it there was honest. Right. Yeah. There's honest effort here. The stuff that I didn't like, I really hated, but man, it's as mild a recommendation as I've given any movie maybe ever, but it's January. Like, we're probably not going to do much better this month. So I'm giving it a mild thumbs up.
Granted, so it did have a television series in between since Scream 4, but it's also worth noting that Scream 4 didn't like do gangbusters at the box office.
No,
$100 million. And then when you
made Weinstein bail on it,
made 50 million off of a $40 million. But it's like, it's not like the laughing at him. Like, so it is interesting in that sense. Like, you're right, it doesn't really have a particular reason to be as enjoyable as at least I thought it was.
And Eddie, I believe this, real quick, this one I think is tracking. I saw somewhere, I could be wrong, to do 36 million this weekend, which is COVID during the Omicron stuff. Like, that's pretty darn good, like, for this series. So
horror is bulletproof. Does not matter when you release a horror movie. Does not matter what. Does not matter. It will make money. It will make, at very least, its budget back and then some.
Yeah. Well, that's what worried me is this movie has the Bye Bye Man slot, which I'm like, we're gonna release some cheap shitty horror movie and make money off it. But yeah, no, it's all right. It's all right.
Eddie.
All right. So I just got out of it a couple hours ago.
Give your rank, give your context, give your thoughts on the first, on the other four first.
Yeah. So I'm a homer, man. I'm a fanboy. That's what I do. Like I said, you know, you throw Michael Myers, you throw Freddy, you throw Jason, you throw Ghostface. Like, I'm in 1,000%. I'll munch up all the hype. I'll watch the trailers a million times, get excited for the poster. That's just who I am. I liked all of the early films to a varying degree. I think your guys' rankings are pretty much right on point. I thought 4 was a little better than people gave it credit for, but whatever. I thought this was just okay. I didn't love it, but it was fine. I'll always accept it. It'll be acceptable to me. To me, the big thing was I thought Tara at the beginning, I thought she stole the show over. What's the actress name? What was
Melissa Barrera?
Yeah, I thought she was so much better than her. So much better. Like, that opening scene was actually really good, I thought. And I liked how they got the recent cultural references, the witch, Babadook. Like, there was something about that I really enjoyed. I think that a couple parts that were, I liked the Billy Loomis kind of hologram. I know it almost got stuffed in there, but I mean, he looks fucking great. I mean, that he looks like almost the same as he did back in the day, 25 years ago. I thought the Cox Arquette was a little disappointing. Like, you stuffed in 10 years on the front lawn talking about being a coward and, you know, retiring. That was a little tough, I thought. I didn't like that. And my biggest thing is, I don't know how Neve Campbell's not in more shit. I really don't get it. She is such like a warm person who like could have awesome roles, in my opinion, and she's just nowhere. From I don't, unless if I'm mistaken, and she's another stuff that I'm not seeing. But
House of Cards.
I never watched it, but I think she's great. I really do.
So where would you get toss your score? Toss a final score.
I'd probably go like a 64. I'd probably say in that range, 64. I think that sounds about right. But yeah, it's just some things, like you said, the crew. I didn't love the crew. You know, it was just kind of, and they kind of just force a bunch of things. Oh, this is Randy's cousins. It's like, come on, like, why? You know, why'd you do that? So there was little shit like that kind of bothered me. I feel like the house should have been a bigger deal at the end. Like, they just, it was pretty nonchalant until like certain points. Like when they rolled up, like when Gale Weathers and Sidney Prescott roll up, like that should have been like, oh shit kind of moment. And it just didn't have it, you know? And that house is iconic to me. I think that's like a fucking, yeah, I think you could stay in it for Halloween a couple of years ago. And I don't know, I just thought that should have been a bigger deal. And I wish we got, if you gave us a hologram, a Billy Loomis, they should have given us a fucking Stu, because Stu was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we think about the ending? So obviously the ending, spoilers, the Amber character who felt like a villain throughout, like she had just like an attitude to her. But the surprising one, though, they allude to it and they try to throw you off the scent, is Jack Quaid's character, Richie, the boyfriend of Sam Carpenter, who is the biological daughter. And that's like kind of the whole what's like. He's basically a ghost. I mean, that's like, what'd you call it, Eddie?
Hologram.
I like the idea that just like a hologram. He just like, he's a hologram that shows up.
Even that, I'll admit, like that didn't have a ton of purpose at the end either. Like, of course there was the relation, but her having drug-induced, what was it, schizophrenia, whatever, like that didn't have much of a problem.
It was pretty forced.
So again, and as Eddie said, she's, and as I was saying, and off Eddie's like Billy Loomis cameo, Sam is the biological daughter of Billy Loomis, which I think that was a cool way to tie it in. She's dating this Richie character who turns out to be working in, she's in cahoots with Amber. They're the ones who initially attacked Sam's sister, Tara, in the beginning of the movie, in the classic Scream type opening. Notice, by the way, Hayden Panettiere's character is still alive in the universe, apparently.
Yeah, that's right. As a
survivor, Woodsboro survivor. And they reveal that they're both diehard fans, and they think it's bullshit that people say, you know, toxic fan culture, and they think the last couple Stab movies were awful. So there's your meta and self-referential stuff, which I thought was great. I really enjoyed that. And then, you know, he taunts his girlfriend, Sam, and gets fucking brutally, by the way, very gory Scream movie.
Yeah, very good gory. Kills. Really good kills.
Stab in the neck, then stab multiple times, then his fucking, his neck slit.
And shot.
And he stabbed
lit up.
Sam Carpenter, but Marissa, he stabbed her and he twisted that fucking knife too. That's going to leave a major stab wound in her in-universe character. But the end, Tara, the first girl who reveals to be Ghostface, which when she reveals that she's the killer, she just shoots another one of the people in the group, which I thought I thought the quick reveal on that was well executed, because you're like, oh, fuck, catches you off guard. She gets lit on fire, and then she gets revived and then gets shot by by the sister in the end. That was fucking... There's your jump scare, Chris.
Well, no, but dude, I have an observation there. Maybe there's a meta element within a meta element to this. But this is the second movie she's been in where she got set on fucking fire between this and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. She doesn't get lit up in that.
Was that intentional? Because the way she reacts, the hysterical screeching, is the exact same as it was when she got...
That's a great observation.
Dude, I'm willing to bet that... It would be funny if she
Madison
became,
is the name of the actress. Right. Yeah, she gets lit the fuck up. Gets super lit up.
Flamethrower.
By fire.
Well, how funny would it be if she became the cinematic equivalent of Kenny from South Park, and in every movie she's in now, she gets set on
or
fire?
She's like, she's the Sean Bean of immolation.
Right, yeah.
What a great point. Yeah, I thought her getting lit on fire. You know, see, that's the type of thing where I do feel like a lot of the comedies nowadays, it's... or a horde nowadays, it is very serious. That's fine. There's a lot of good ones. And there's some comedy elements in them, but just the absurdity of the ending there, and it played. Yeah. And I think it was earned, right? I do think the ending being as fucked up as it was very earned with how they set it up throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. That's a great point. She was lit on fire in the last two big movies she was in. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she just asked, man, what if that's like an on-set ad lib? She's like, you know what? You've seen this Tarantino movie I was in. You got light me on fire, fam.
It's like Will Ferrell taking his shirt off. Now it's like it's a stipulation. You got to set me on fire every movie.
That's be part of her contract stipulation. Like, I'm not doing this movie unless you fucking light me up. Sorry.
I also thought it was mean to kill Dewey. Like, come on, let him keep getting these roles. You can't.
I think he had to die though, right?
So yeah, one of them had to die.
Yes.
And you're not going to kill Sidney Prescott. You can't kill Sidney Prescott. Right.
Could have killed Gail.
I think it's true.
probably could have killed Gail Weathers. I would have to think the contract negotiation, a little more pull on Courtney Cox's end. A touch more. Yeah.
Unfortunately, she was of the three returning. She was easily the weakest, in my opinion.
The other two
crushed it.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, I thought even when it was little moments with David Arquette, I think him rolling up to the house when he first joined them, he was good. I think he had it could have been corny, but I don't think it was. I think it was like the perfect little like humor in it, but serious. It was, I thought it was well done.
One of the best lines in the movie, I thought, was the part where he first rolls up and meets them. And the one guy just makes fun of him, like, yeah, well, you're drunk and you're this and your wife left you, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, and Arquette's like, well, maybe you're the serial killer, because those words really cut.
That did make me laugh.
That was the thing, too. I think a lot of structurally speaking, it wasn't perfectly directed. It could have been snapped. Again, I'll reference Chris Stuck because he said it better than I could. It didn't, pacing wise, it didn't hit quite like, you know, a Wes Craven movie would have hit. Mm-hmm. And obviously massive rest in peace to Wes Craven. But I do think the dialogue and the funny elements were there. And I don't think really anything was a dud. I think they landed. I think you could really have had a movie that felt like boomerish, right? Because like you're referencing so many present day things. And I thought it was funny. I thought they did a good job on all of it. So
that's a very good point.
You're right, Chris. I think you said it. Chris, you may have said it best. So like this really had no business, based on when it's being released, based on everything being enjoyed. Like I'm more surprised it's good than I think I would have been if it was just dog shit.
Yeah, because even the complaints I have, like, I think are legitimate, but like they don't make me as angry as I feel like they should. I don't know what it is. There is a weird movie. There is a weird charm to it. The same way there was a charm to the original film as well. There's one other guy I wanted to bring up who I thought was wasted in this. And I feel like his career has kind of gone in a weird path. Man, I think Dylan Minetti is actually a really talented actor. He was on that dumb, that Suicide Show. I only watched the first season of it, but he was great in it.
13 Reasons Why.
Yeah. Outside of the fact that he's like, fucking 40 playing a high schooler in this.
He was also in one of the best horror movies in the last 10 years. Don't Breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And he was in, didn't he play a high school bully in Let Me In, which was like 12 years ago?
Pretty long time. Oh, God, yeah.
He was in Let Me In.
Yeah.
Greg Claus. Wow.
Matt Reeves. There you go.
Yeah, man.
Matt Reeves.
He'll be Batman in the next in the sequel to the, or he'll be Robin. He'll be Robin in the next Batman sequel. No, but that's an actor I really like, and I felt like he was just kind of he was just kind of there, kind of wasted. But yeah, I mean this movie's all right. Yeah, I think I do kind of like it. Yeah,
he's also in Goosebumps.
Yeah,
good for him. Yeah, he's in Prisoners. Look at that, full circle.
Yeah, he was good. Right, he was playing a high schooler 9 years ago.
Exactly.
Next week we'll do 355. I think we'll probably touch on it. We'll do Macbeth as well. Yeah. That's on Apple TV Plus. I mean, if someone, I think the Lights, Camera, Barstool Reddit had a really good comment about the movie. I want to read it quick. I mean, I highly suggest watching it. Look, if you don't like Shakespeare stuff, you're not going to like it. there's really nothing else to say, by the way, on that. Like, if you don't like Shakespeare, it's just not a movie.
Do not watch it. I'm going to tell you right now. If you don't know Shakespeare, if you can't sit through that sort of shit, do not watch that movie because you will not it.
Jesus Shuttleworth said, "If I think the highest compliment you can ever give a Shakespeare adaptation is, I wish this version was around when I was in high school." I think it's a great way to put it.
Mm.
Yeah. Wow.
I liked it quite a bit. I really wasn't a Shakespeare. The only Shakespeare I ever liked for many years was Romeo plus Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio. But I've become significant. Well, I guess West Side Story. Everything's fucking Shakespeare in the end. So it's like, once you start breaking down those barriers, you're just saying the same thing.
This one's directed by one of the Coen brothers.
Yeah, solo directorial debut. Right. Mm-hmm. I think I have that right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. What else? I think that's it. Eddie, thanks for hopping on.
Thanks for having me. Always happy to do it.
As a diehard, I'm glad. Did you show up in a ghost face mask?
Yeah, I had the from number two. It was the neon knives.
Sneaky, one of the coolest Halloween props to buy is like the knife that looks like that, the buck knife that has like the blood that flows through it when you pump it.
Remember the ghost face mask that you could fucking pump the blood? Remember how big the deal that shit was?
That's right. Key, like boys. The knife. Yeah, you got to know if it's the blood pump or the non-blood pump.
Need the pump.
Kids who had the blood pump were the cooler kids. Like they were the kids that got more love. Thanks for coming on, Chris. We'll see. Have you watched Macbeth yet?
No, I haven't. I saw 355.
Apple TV Plus.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I can watch.
Yeah, that's where you watch. For Chris and anyone listening, who's gonna get the call to be the fourth for that? Who's our Shakespeare person?
Who at Barstool do you think would be into Shakespeare in some capacity?
I feel like it's a loaded question because I feel like the answer is going to be nobody.
Nick's a smart guy too, you know. Nick could like something like that.
I don't think he's that sort of smart.
He likes, you know what I mean? He likes Romeo plus Juliet.
That does not make you a Shakespeare fan. That is the antithesis of a Shakespeare fan. That's the opposite.
But I do think this is. It's not that. Obviously, it's not that. But I would say if you like adaptations and different things, it's different in that sense. Though it's obviously not Leonardo DiCaprio with a fucking revolver.
Which, by the way, that one guy, I think his name is Alex Hassel. He plays one of the characters in Macbeth. He's also played Sid Vicious in Cowboy Bebop and was one of the worst adaptations I've ever seen of any character in any show of all time. And then he did great in Macbeth. So just a wild year for that guy.
Cowboy, the Cowboy Bebop, man.
Mm-hmm. That was tough.
What a pile of shit. I just texted Nick. Do you like Shakespeare's? Who else? Who's another? Is Chief a Shakespeare guy? Chief fucking loves history.
He is. He's like into fables and shit. He might be.
I
think you just answered it. If he's in the, have you ever met anyone who's into fables who doesn't appreciate Shakespeare?
I like fables.
Dude, we'll
video
be
games.
Sitting there on Redline Radio, a sports podcast, and he'll be comparing Chicago sports to fables. I'm like, I'm not following you.
Maybe we have Chief then. Maybe we got to have Chief on then.
No.
Yeah. I want someone that would roast it. People like Coley on.
By
this
the
one.
Way,
Coley would hate this shit.
Large being the guy he is, Large, our good buddy, he has Red Rocket, and he said he's gonna watch Red Rocket on his next flight.
Nice.
And I said, hey, rampant sex and nudity. He goes, great, it'll be an enjoyable flight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would not recommend watching that on a plane at all.
Nick, Nick gave exactly basically what you said, that Romeo plus Juliet is a good movie. He said, again, I guess he's the responsible for the creation of 10 things I hate about you. So yeah, but in a more domino effect way.
I see.
Interesting. So I am actually curious. I've only begun to appreciate it more and more, but again, I'm kind of down that road. Like I'm not like a, and I obviously would never read it. I stopped and you just heard, if you listen to the interview, I gave up reading Dune within fucking one paragraph and I turned on the book on tape. I'm reading the book. I'm not just listening. Like I'm going line, which I didn't know book on tapes. They, when they're reading the quotes, they skip the, like the part who, where they say who's saying it. That's tough for a person with bad reading comprehension. I'm really jumping around those pages. That's just, it's a tough obstacle.
You know, would have been perfect, but it's just the circumstances won't work out, at least for another month. Is, I mean, Rico Bosco, number one Shakespeare fan in The Office. Just doesn't work. It sucks. Maybe next time.
Yeah. That's it for Ken Jay. If your fucking sports team, I mean, all of our teams are not in the playoffs. So,
yeah.
You know what? If your team's in the playoffs, well, fuck yourself. That's it. For Ken Jack, Chris, Eddie, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.